welcome to Contemplative Revolution, a podcast by the WCCM about what it means to live a contemplative, spiritual and Christian life while still playing an active role in our modern world. Join us for conversations with fellow contemplatives in action from around the globe. In this episode, Lawrence Freeman reflects on the challenge of the attention deficit in the human mind, an especially acute problem of our time. This podcast is part of Levels of Consciousness and the Fruits of the Spirit, held in 2021. You can listen and watch the full series by subscribing to WCCM Plus at wccmplus.org. We hope you enjoy it.
I'd like to say what an inspiration it has been to be able to see the response we've had to this concept of taking this year as a year to reflect on the meaning of health, and to see how this has been taken up and enriched and deepened by many of our national communities, an increasing number. And as you may know, Dr. Barry White, Irish doctor who has been pioneering the introduction of meditation into the Irish medical profession and is setting up a contemplative healthcare system here in Ireland, that Barry is giving a series of monthly talks on health, which has had a huge enrollment, and it really was wonderful and took us by surprise, but a wonderful response. Over the next 9 months, he'll be talking on different aspects of health. And at the beginning of his first talk a couple of weeks ago, he outlined his general view of health and placed meditation at the center of it. And he'll be talking about different aspects and some practical advice on health and how to be healthy, such as exercise and sleep and nutrition, and how to deal with suffering and difficulties in life. But at the heart of it all, he has this very clear spiritual understanding of the centrality of meditation as a healthy practice, as a practice that leads to wholeness. So I think these retreats that we're beginning now, 8 of them during this year, for the national communities, actually form part of this deep reflection on health and wholeness. And we can't turn on the news or open a newspaper today without being confronted with the pandemic and the difficulties of disease and the disruption it makes, the anxiety it produces. So it's very timely that we should be reflecting on the meaning of health as a contemplative community. Because I think a contemplative community is one that pays attention to the world that it's living in, to the difficulties, the challenges, the troubles, the divisions that it lives among, whether it's political or social, whether it's social injustice or economic injustice, whether it's persecution of minorities or whatever it may be, that we should as contemplatives be aware of this, but aware of it in a way that doesn't make us distracted from the centrality of the spirit. And this, I think, is the gift that we can hopefully contribute to our contemporaries and to our societies, which is the gift of meditation as a way of being able to pay attention. And out of attention, as we'll see later, comes compassion. If you're truly attentive to someone, you are loving them. And the key quote probably of our retreat on the muscle of attention is Jesus Jesus is teaching, love one another as I have loved you. Pay attention to one another as I pay attention to you. So the contemplative response to the crisis that we are passing through globally is a very important component, I think, of our coming through this crisis in a healthy way and being able to rebuild a better world with more healthy attitudes and more healthy ways of treating the environment, of understanding social justice and human rights and the care of the young and the meaning of education and the meaning of health, the meaning of democracy. These are all things that make us human. And these aren't in a separate category from the rest of our spiritual life, because they are what make us human. And it's these qualities of freedom, of respect for others, of tolerance of other points of view, and of commitment to justice in all its forms, just as we see in the life of Jesus, that it's this that makes us fully alive. And we glorify God by becoming fully alive. The glory of God is the human being fully alive, says Saint Irenaeus of Lyon. The glory of God is the human being fully alive. And the fullness of life is lived in our families, in our societies, in our churches, in our institutions, and of course, in the depth of our own spirit, in community. And so I hope that this time of retreat will be the beginning of a deepening of our reflection on the meaning of a contemplative response to the crisis, the opportunities that we face in this crisis, and that we can each of us bring to our communities in the Philippines and in all the other national communities. We can bring the fruit of this gift of meditation and the fruit of our community into contact with the needs of our world. So we're going to be doing this during these retreats this year by deepening our understanding and insight into the teaching, the basic teaching of the community, the essential teaching, as we call it, which is what John Mayne passed on to us. He didn't invent it, but he recognized it, he refreshed it, and he also developed it. He helped it to evolve. And the tradition that we are part of is not a kind of a museum exhibit, you know, that we put into a deep freeze and worship from a distance. The tradition that we are part of is a living transmission of the Holy Spirit, helping the human race to evolve over time and through all sorts of experiences that we as a human race face, including the really big challenges and crises that we face at the moment. So it's to understand this essential teaching more deeply. And at the heart of this essential teaching is the practice of meditation, the radical simplicity of the personal commitment that you and I make every day to sit in the cell, in the inner room of our heart. Otherwise, it's all words. Beautiful words, maybe, or inspiring words. But without this practice, it's the words just eventually disappear into outer space. But if we are linking our communication of this tradition to a simple personal daily practice, then we are doing something. This is action. This is making a change, as it were. This is, in ways that we can't measure or fully understand, but we are, as a contemplative community, making a contribution to the healing that needs to be worked and to the changes that need to be faced in our world. So I've spoken on several occasions, and some of you may have heard it, about the levels of consciousness that meditation takes us through and exposes. As soon as we begin to meditate, we become more aware of ourselves, more self-aware, more conscious of how we are made, of how the human mind and the human body and the human person really operates. This is an aspect of self-knowledge. And this self-knowledge, which can be very lacking in an attention deficit or attention-deprived society and culture like ours, this self-knowledge is so important for humanity, because without it, we don't know God. And knowing God is the life of the human being. Saint Irenaeus said, the glory of God is the human being fully alive, and the life of the human being is the vision of God. So it seems to be, you seem to get a feedback here. God is glorified in the human being, and that is what, and that is, that happens when the human being realizes his or her full potential, becomes fully alive through all the experiences that life throws at us, through all the phases and different stages of our lives. And that life that we expand and fulfill is the vision of God, is the knowledge of God, is our interplay with God, is our eventually our union with God. So it's a kind of a dance. At first it seems as if you've got two people in the dance, but as the dance really gets going, you realize there is only the dance. And the dance is the love of God. So the levels of consciousness are aspects of our mind and of our being, which we discover and pass through as we continue the journey of meditation, which is a journey of faith from beginning to end. St. Paul says, the way of the gospel is a way of faith, a way that begins in faith and ends in faith. It begins in faith and it ends in faith. And that journey of faith begins in a special way, in a contemplative way, or in an interiorized way, in an integrated way, as soon as we begin a contemplative path, a serious contemplative practice. Now, for us, we've been led, thankfully, to this path of meditation and the way of the mantra. We don't say this is the only way or that we're the best, but we know, and we can share this knowledge with whoever is interested, that this is a valid way. And it's a universal way, and we can teach meditation to 5-year-olds or to 95 years old. We can teach meditation to people in recovery from addiction, people on the margins of society, people sleeping on the streets. And we can teach it to top executives and in banks and politicians. It's the radical simplicity of meditation in this way that I think has allowed the community that John Main began more than 40 years ago to evolve in the way that it has. Not by any great design, not by a huge investment of money or great bureaucratic institutions, but by the work of the spirit. It was actually 30 years ago this year that the WCCM, the World Community for Christian Meditation, was named at the John Main Seminar in New Harmony, appropriately, New Harmony, Indiana. And the seminar was led by Bede Griffiths. And he took as his topic, his theme for the seminar, which you can see online even today, he took as his theme John Main's teaching on community. And Bede understood Father John's insight into the link between meditation and the renewal of the human community. So 30 years ago, this year, the WCCM was, as it were, christened and named, but it began, I suppose you could take it back to 1975 in London when Father John started the first meditation center. In fact, he didn't start it as a meditation center. He started it as a small lay community, which I joined for 6 months, a long 6 months. But soon after we had started this little community at his monastery in London, people began knocking on the door and saying, look, we hear you're teaching meditation to these guys. Well, what about us? We'd like to learn to meditate in our own tradition too, because we can't find it anywhere else. We don't hear about this in our parishes or in most monasteries. And so if we want to meditate, we have to go to outside of our own tradition. We go to TM, or we go to a Zen monastery, or we go to a Buddhist monastery, or wherever. But if this really does exist within our own Christian faith and household, then why are you locking it up just for this small group of young guys who are making a long retreat? And John Main thought about this, and I was with him as we talked about it. And it was then that he said, well, we can't keep this just in the monastery. We have to welcome people in who want to learn. And that's how it all began, with small meditation groups coming to the little house on the campus at the monastery in London. And then from there to Montreal, from Montreal to the center in London, and to the growth of the WCCM, 1991, the seminar, and the many years then of travel and the growth of the national communities around the world. I remember in those early days coming frequently to the Philippines and seeing the growth of the seed at that time. And then to Bombo. And Bombo is a special gift and grace and sacrament of this evolution, but it's not the end. Bombo isn't the heavenly Jerusalem yet. The heavenly Jerusalem is up there beyond time, but Bombo is hard work. It's hard work to set up a new center and a new community, to raise the money, to deal with French bureaucracy, and and to let a community, allow a community to grow. Hard work, but beautiful work. And thank you for your support and for your prayers and for your belief and conviction, because it's really helping Bonvo to develop, I think, as God and as Father John would like. But the real mystery is the whole of the WCCM that we are celebrating in these series of retreats during this year, this anniversary year. So let's come back to what I was saying, that this first level of consciousness that we encounter when we meditate is what we'll be looking at today. And that first level of consciousness, if you remember the diagram that I wrote, maybe I'll take a picture of it and send it out to you after this talk, is the level of distraction. We all hear about meditation. Something attracts us and calls us, and we want to practice it, and we want to experience it. I certainly did the first time I heard it. And the first time I heard about meditation was 1971. So that's 40 years, isn't it? Or more, 50 years, no, 50 years. Wow. So 1971, I was a very young undergraduate at university. I was going through a number of, 20-year-old problems. And I went to see Father John, who was in Washington at that time, and spent Easter with him in the community there. And a great gift that he had, which was really the driving spirit of everything that happened later, the great gift he had was to be able to listen and to pay attention. And when you spoke to him, you knew you were being heard. Simone Weil, great French mystic, who I'll quote because attention is so much part of her thought, says that there are many occasions when we are with people who are in trouble, in need, and there's nothing we can do for them. We can't solve their problems. Think of corona. Think of people in intensive care during the coronavirus, or the people suffering from mental illness because they've no way of dealing with the problems of incarceration and shutdown. And so we can't solve those problems, but what we can do, and it's the greatest gift we can give, is to listen, to pay attention to them, each personally, individually, and to hear what they are saying about themselves and how they express their needs, not statistics. All of the time we're listening to the news today, you know, we're hearing statistics and percentages and different experts, talking about the whether the figures are going up or they're going down, or arguing about it. And of course, we need that kind of analysis. But that's different from what we're talking about. The ability to pay attention to the unique person, manifestation of the divine that we are with at that moment. And Simone Weil says, this is the greatest act of generosity that we are capable of, to listen wholeheartedly. Remember, Jesus is saying, love one another as I have loved you. Pay attention to each other, listen to each other, care for each other as I have listened and paid attention and cared for you. So, I went to see Father John, and he gave me the gift of his attention. And then he gave me another gift during one of our sessions. He introduced me to meditation in a few words, with a light touch, with no kind of pressure, no instruction that I should meditate. No, he never told anyone to do anything, but he would show people the way. And that's what listening and paying attention to others is about. It's not about telling them what to do or controlling them, but it's about showing the way or sharing the way that you have found in a non-controlling, non-possessive, non-interfering kind of way. So when he gave me that very short but life-changing introduction to meditation, I knew somehow that this was an encounter with something utterly authentic. I knew, I believed, I had no doubt, but I couldn't understand it. It was outside of anything that I had really, I'd read a lot about meditation, I suppose, but I hadn't really understood it in the way that he communicated it to me. And so when he told me about how to meditate, I was mystified in my head, in my intellect, but my heart knew that what he was saying was true. And I knew that this was something I needed and wanted to experience and to grow in. And I still know that. That hunger, as it were, has never left me. So this gift of meditation is that it has to be accepted by the person to whom it is being offered. And this means that in the same way, when we pay attention to someone, we give them our attention, this great act of generosity when you really pay attention to someone as a unique individual manifestation of God, then what you hope will happen is that your gift of attention to them will stimulate a response from them, a reciprocation of that attention, that they will pay attention to you, or to what you're saying, not just to you as a ego, but to you as a channel. And when that happens, God is born. The word becomes flesh. And that is the glory of God manifesting in the fullness of human life. So this is why it's very important for us to reflect on the meaning of attention. Because attention, this experience of attention, is truly at the center of human meaning. It's not about technology. It's not about wealth. It's not about fame. It's not about success. All of those things become totally unimportant when we are facing the crisis of life or death, as we are facing it during this pandemic. What matters is this meeting, this encounter through love, through attention with each other, and therefore creating a portal, a door through which God can enter into the world. And that's why every one of our meditation groups and our national communities can be, and it are, in fact, a portal, a door, whether they meet in a parish, whether they meet in a home, whether they meet in a school, whether they meet online. They are a simple but wonderful opening to the divine, allowing the divine love, the divine attention to enter into the human condition, into the world as we know it. So that is why the first level of consciousness that we meet when we encounter, when we meditate, the first step of self-knowledge is a bit of a shock, because we find that we have very limited capacity for attention. And this goes on for about 40 or 50 years. We discover how distracted we are at that first level of attention. And a lot of people give up meditating immediately. We started a new course on meditation and leadership at the Georgetown Business School this week. I gave the second of the classes online last night. And there are about, well, we've had to increase the numbers because there's such a demand for the class. So I think there are 42 students. MBA students, young people in their mid-20s to mid-30s. And every twice a year as we do this course, and I meet with them individually, I realize how urgent it is for us to communicate this teaching, share the gift of meditation. Because they are desperate for it. And I also see each time, each course, each semester, I see how many of them struggle with sitting still for 5 minutes once a day. What's gone wrong? These are leaders of the world, highly intelligent leaders of the future, and many of them find it desperately impossible to sit still and be silent for 5 minutes even. And so we give them all the support we can, and because what we want them to do is to develop a practice, and many of them really do get into the practice. But that's the first level of consciousness that we have to confront, is our high level of distraction. So that's one strand that we're going to follow during these retreats, the levels of consciousness. And the second strand that relates to this is more theological. The levels of consciousness, we could say, well, this is how we experience it psychologically. But theologically, we're going to look at the second level relating to it, which are the fruits of the Spirit. And you remember what the first fruit of the Spirit is? Love. And what I'd like you to just to take one thought away during this retreat is the equivalence of love and attention. They are the same thing. To pay attention is to love. To love is to pay attention. So, a few words before we conclude about what we discover at this first level as we try to pay attention, as we sit down we sit still with our back straight, we close our eyes, and we try to say the mantra. And within seconds, we find ourselves thinking about our problems, our shopping list, our fantasies. Our minds clearly are in a very untidy, untamed, wayward, and crazy state of distraction. And this is true even for people, you know, who professionally may have great powers of concentration, great powers being able to focus on certain technical things, like, you know, a doctor or a lawyer or you know, somebody who's trained over many years to really focus or to use knowledge and skills in a very focused way. Even they will discover that their minds are very distracted. I was talking not long ago to a really brilliant guy who's expert in artificial intelligence and world famous. And he told me that he was anxious to discover the source of consciousness. What is consciousness? And he knew that the machines that he was building, the computer programs he was building, that's not consciousness, he said. But he doesn't know what consciousness is. And he wants to find out. And I said, have you meditated? And he said, no, never meditated. So I said, well, maybe you should think about it. This search for consciousness has been going on since the dawn of humanity, and meditation has been the primary way in which people have found the source of consciousness, the center of their being. So he said, well, yes. He said, well, maybe I should look into it. So he did try to meditate. And, but like anybody else, he said, I don't have time. And I don't have time. And he said, I just find my mind is wandering all over the place. This is one of the most highly trained minds you could find probably in the world. And he said, I just can't do it. You know, and he said, you know, I don't feel I'm getting anything out of it, therefore, and he gave up. At least he was very clear about it. You know, he said, I know I haven't got time this year. I might take it up next year when I finish my various projects. So discovering this highly distracted state of mind at the first level of consciousness is universal. That's one of the first things we have to say to the MBA students who are so keen to succeed at meditation, that give up that idea straight away. In fact, try to give up the idea of success or failure at all. But you have to deal with, the ego has to deal with the feeling of failure, that I cannot sit and say my mantra from the beginning to the end. So that's the first level of consciousness. And it's there that we begin to realize developing our capacity for attention, which is what makes us human, takes time. It's like developing good muscular health. There's something called Giovanni can talk about it better than I can, probably, his knowledge of the human body. Muscle atrophy, the wasting away of muscle mass. When people are sick and they have to lie in bed for long stretches of time, their muscles usually begin to fade away. Due to one thing, lack of exercise, or sometimes poor nutrition. And the muscle can look then, in quite a short space of time, as if it is lost, it's just gone away. But it hasn't actually gone away. It's just become much smaller. But it can be rebuilt. And a good therapy, a healthy attitude to life, a spirit of hopefulness and help from people who can help you, can rebuild that muscle so that you can walk, move, stretch, and be in your body as you are meant to be. The same is true of the mind and of our capacity for attention. So you may say, well, you know, I have a very, very busy mind. And I'm doing a lot of things. I'm multitasking all the day. But a hyperactive mind, too much multitasking, constant distraction, jumping from one thing to another without resting in this work of attention, or rapid bursts of stimulation, which is what we like today, that might seem as if the faculty of attention is being exercised a lot. But it's not. Actually, the muscle of attention is atrophying, is wasting away. It is wasting away and it needs exercise. It needs therapy. The therapy of the soul is prayer. Pure prayer. We have to face the fact as religious people that many of the forms of prayer or expressions of prayer that we exercise can be forms of distraction. Can be. Meditation, as we know, doesn't replace any other form of prayer that you find helpful or through which you can grow in your love of God. But if we don't have this centrality of contemplation in our practice of prayer, then the danger is, and I'm not being dismissive here, but the danger here is that our religiosity, our other forms of prayer, however busy we are with them, can become distractions. And that primary, all-important quality of pure attention, which is pure prayer, is lost or is not exercised and begins to waste away. And if that process were to continue without interruption, it would just lead to a religious fanaticism or compulsiveness. You know, the kind of religious person who is hyper-religious, but really doesn't pay attention to anybody else or anything else, just to their religiosity. We have to face that fact as religious people. The gift of sharing meditation as part of our Christian tradition of prayer is that it allows these other forms of prayer to become healthy exercises. But I think it is important that we remember in the church and in all religions, because this is something that affects all religions, that we remember that at the heart of our spiritual life, there needs to be this experience of pure attention, pure prayer, of contemplation. Even though at first we may feel as if we're failing, we're not doing very well at it, we have to do it, and we need to support each other in that learning process. We need muscles, physical muscles, to move, to stretch, and we need attention to be able to focus, to be able to love, to listen, to attend to the needs of others, to learn, to understand. Without attention, a healthy muscle of attention, all of these essential human aspects of growth, focusing, listening, attending to the needs of others and our own needs, learning what we don't know, and understanding the mystery that we're part of, all of this begins to suffer. Attention is not the same as concentration. Father John points this out in much of his teaching. He said, it's not about sitting there furrowing your brow and really trying hard to say your mantras, even if it's going to kill you. That's not attention. In fact, it just increases your stress. And, you know, some people say, oh, I get very stressed when I meditate. My neck gets very tight and, you know, I can't move. You know? So we have to make clear that there is this distinction between attention and obsessive concentration. Both John Mayne and Simone Weil describe this very in their own ways, but very clearly. We're very conscious today of attention deficit, particularly among the young, but not only the young. But it's particularly painful to observe in the young because it's as if they are trying to make contact. They're trying to accept the gift of life. They're trying to break out of their private worlds, out of their Facebook worlds, out of their private memories. They're trying to break out, to spread their wings, to live, you know. And yet so often with the young today, you feel that there's been a contraction, not an expansion. And this contraction has locked them into a very private and a very airless room. And they can really suffer there. And when they encounter meditation, when they encounter people who listen to them and give attention to them, you can see that they begin to respond. We see this with the people, the young people who come to Bombo. But that's only the beginning of a long and hard journey, because seeing that there is light at the end of the tunnel doesn't mean you're at the end of the tunnel yet. You have to walk towards the light, and walking with muscles that may not be very, very healthy. So we're very conscious of the prevalence of attention ADHD, attention deficit or hyperactivity disorder. I think it's often over-medicalized, and the pharmaceutical companies have made huge, particularly in the States, of course, have made huge profits out of creating this diagnosis. Nearly everybody, well, that's an exaggeration, but you meet a great number of people in the States, you know, who adults as well, who attribute their difficulties in life to this medical condition and are taking medication for it. The doctor who first diagnosed ADHD is furious at this. He says that his work has been hijacked and misrepresented and misinterpreted and exploited. So there is such a thing as this condition. But it's actually not just a medical condition. It is part of our cultural disease. And it's being transmitted to the young at a very early age. We have to understand how we have become such a distracted civilization. On the one hand, we have this inability to pay attention, to make, you know, those healthy relationships that demand attention to the other, and to take the attention off ourselves in order to make relationships. How can you make a relationship if you're only thinking about yourself all the time? So we have to learn to take the attention off ourselves, which is why meditation bears fruit in all our relationships, in the first fruit of the spirit. The opposite of that is obsessive compulsive disorder, where we become fixated and compulsive about a very small thing or a number of very small things, obsessive or addictive. Attention lies between these two extremes. As always, health and wholeness are formed in the middle way, or the narrow way, the narrow path, as Jesus calls it, the narrow path that leads to life. And let us hope that not only a few can find it. So let's like to conclude there, and we'll take up this first level of consciousness and our experience of distraction and of discovering what attention means. Because if you're in a very distracted state, you don't even know what attention means. You just feel the, you know, the symptoms, and we'll look at those symptoms later today. We look at the symptoms and the signs of our distracted state. But what a community like what a community like ours, I think, has to offer in a very simple and humble way is hope. Hope that is communicated through a simple practice. And that's why meditation is at the heart of our community. Thank you.
You've been listening to A Contemplative Revolution, a podcast by the WCCM. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, you can watch the full series by subscribing to WCCM Plus at wccmplus.org. Goodbye.